This week on Talk Hockey Radio, Taff is back out of Batra's basement. We discuss Euro hockey shenanigans, dry turf development is all the rage. We discuss clothing policies and Spanish coaching departures. But first, new! Yes,
big one.
Reverse stick is stopping. What do we think, Taff and Fraser?
I'm shocked. I'm actually shocked, right? Because, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but 300 episodes. I'm kind of like, I've not finished the 300th episode yet, but it is shocking because the guys have done a really good job. I mean, immensely. It's probably one of the most popular podcasts out there, other than ours, of course, right? but no, on a serious note, it's probably one of the most popular podcasts out there. And them basically finishing is going to be pretty tough to kind of like follow, really, because, like, you know, there is no other podcast out there that does a weekly thing. I don't think they're either monthly or fortnightly or something like that. Or is there one? I don't know.
Let's Stick Together does it pretty much weekly, but it's only for a few weeks.
Yeah, when they're not on international duty, that's when they do it. But this has been going on for a couple of weeks, absence or whatever. They've been doing it for pretty much every single week for 300 episodes, really. For God, you know, however many years that means, that to be 4 or 5 years.
Oh, quick maths. roughly 6 years. If they have had, obviously, a number of occasions where they haven't quite done it weekly because they have lives.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, like Christmas breaks and things
God,
like that.
God, where's the commitment? Fuck.
They've had, like, also, they have done more than 300 episodes because they've done like World Cup dailies and things like that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. So it's not like 300 plus episodes, isn't it? Really. I mean, we did like a collaborative thing with them, right? You know, just as they started off way back when, and I just, you know, they're very knowledgeable as well, and you know, they kind of like get people engaged and things like that. So it's going to be a big loss, I think.
They've done so much for hockey. Obviously, you know, it's for people who really get it and really love it, their audience. But they would do things like set up competitions alongside major events. I won a Tokyo volunteer shirt by being lucky enough to draw a team that won the Tokyo Olympics. They, like you said, they're very knowledgeable. I think it's great, but, you know, we're pretty Eurocentric with what we talk about. Let's Stick Together is pretty Eurocentric. These guys, despite being in Australia, can talk with authority about most parts of the world, and do so about the politics of the game, about the coaching of the game, the playing, the umpiring. It's quite incredible the depth and quality that they've offered for so long, and free of charge. You know, there is a Patreon, but, you know, essentially they've been doing it free of charge. And yeah, I was a bit startled when they were talking on the 300th episode about they gave away their age a little bit. I have met them, I think, randomly. Yeah, it was interesting. I was quite surprised. I expected they were younger, given the fact they were so the time it takes. We all know how hard it is to prepare for episodes. Most of us struggle to turn up with our phone with a few notes. And these guys are able to provide, unless they get really drunk, pretty detailed information. So I'm very much in awe of them. You know, I think they, alongside people like Ross and Rod, are up there as some of the best journalists in hockey. So to lose them from their regular stuff is really disappointing. But on the other hand, they have lives to lead, and they have said that they'll be popping up every now and then. So fair enough.
Yeah.
Good innings.
Yeah, hopefully, like, they'll do some specials and things like that, and, you know, obviously we'll keep an eye on that as well. But yeah, I don't know. Well, they mentioned you as well, Fraser.
What's this show? I've never heard of it.
you gotta listen to it. Yeah, they did mention you and stuff on there. I don't know. I'm gonna have to basically reach out to Matt and John at some point and sort of like say, you know, wow, what a big loss it's gonna be. For sure.
Shall we move on to the Euro hockey shenanigans?
We can do. Go on then. Well, you did a special podcast, didn't you, about the Euro hockey?
It was at the end of a group stage.
Yeah. So we basically covered, well, you guys basically covered the group stages. And so we're just going to talk about what happened after that. Did you get
not major.
Did you get to watch any of the games, by the way?
Of course we did.
Of course you did. You like hockey badges, you two, more than I am. I mean, I thought I was, but you guys are absolutely out there more than me, for sure.
It's a young man's game, Taff.
Sorry? A young man's game, yeah, of course it is, yeah. go on then, just give us some...
Should we start with women or start with men?
Whichever one you want. You're leading on this one, sir, Simon. You know, you introduced the podcast, you know? Let's go with it.
God, pressure. All right, well, I think let's start with a big one. It's the men's final. The finalists were the Netherlands and England. The bronze medal match was Germany and Belgium. If I remember correctly, Belgium won the bronze medal match, spoiling the German show. I kind of got the impression tournament long, Germany just weren't quite what they were at the World Cup. Maybe teams have figured them out a little bit. Maybe it's a bit of fatigue. I don't know. You know, they've still got some absolute quality. Their goalkeeper is phenomenal, but they didn't quite seem at their best. Belgium, I think, for me, kind of lucky, maybe a little bit. We talked, Fraser and I, about the fact they had left probably the best striker in the world at home, which was a bold decision. And I think the bronze medal indicates it probably wasn't necessarily the best decision. Leaving behind a guy who can score more than 50 goals in probably the second or third best domestics league in the world is quite something. I think some of the youngsters struggled a little bit. They got into it, and you know, towards the end of the tournament, they looked a bit more like they were clicking and whatnot. And you know, at some point, you have to blood these players. Maybe it was a bit too many at once. And Fun League would have been maybe a better place to really blood them more. But they have had a number of games there. But when it comes to big competitions, you know, Belgium, I think, would be going into that expecting to be contending for gold. And they never, ever looked like they were serious contenders in that tournament. Yeah. What do you reckon, Fraser?
No, I think you touched on it there. I don't think the German team really had the presence on the pitch that they had in the World Cup. They definitely didn't have the final 2 minutes of the game that they had in the World Cup. And, I mean, like we covered in the previous episode, really odd selection choice to leave out, as you say, arguably one of the best forwards in the world to go to a major tournament. So, reap what you sow, I guess.
Yep, yeah. Well, on the final, not much happened, did it? Pretty boring game.
Yeah, no controversy. no debates, no online...
No pile-ons on the umpires. yeah, so it was a fun game. So first of all, I think it's worth saying it's really good and really enjoyable for us in the UK, and specifically those of us who live in England, to see England doing well, and the men's team continues to do well. On the other hand, some would say they continue to disappoint because unfortunately they didn't win the gold here. But I think it's not long ago that being disappointed with silver would have been something we'd have grasped with both hands in this country. So it's massive progress. But yeah, they pulled one back to make it 2-1. They took the goalkeeper off. Brendan Creed made an outrageous last-ditch save, sprinting a ridiculous distance and diving. And I was actually listening. I was at a conference where Sarah Wilson was talking, who's the umpire. She said, you know, this is a pretty scary moment because if he takes it on the body, it's a stroke and he's off. If he gets hurt, it's a stroke, he's off and he's hurt. Yeah, you know, it could easily have been a corner potentially, depending on how he deflected it as well. So lots of different things at play, but he worked incredibly well, got back, and then England ran down the other end of the pitch and they put the ball in the goal and the crowd goes wild. But then the Dutch start saying they want a referral and Ben, the umpire, the controlling end, says, well, no, you took too long. And he checks with the other umpire, Sarah, and she says, yeah, it took too long. Time goes on a little bit, they argue a bit more, and then Ben just goes, okay, we'll do the referral. And it goes upstairs, and I think the first question to Ali Keogh was, did they do it in time? And England were upset because they had been told 10 seconds to do a referral. But on pitch, of course, having both umpires say you've taken too long kind of gets round that, and that just should have ended the debate. But it went up, and that was possibly, I think some of the umpires have said maybe that was a mistake. Ali was back, and although it was 13 seconds, Ben didn't have eye contact with the player, so he couldn't have seen it initially. So it probably would have been within the 10 seconds had they got his attention earlier. So fine, that stands. Then we go through, and Ali spotted a stick tackle on Phil Roper before he crosses it. then the shot goes up high. Some argue that the shot up high actually was deflected off a defender's stick, so therefore it was played up dangerously anyway by a defender, so it would be a goal. Ali recommends a free hit defence. Then Ben challenges her back and says, well, hold on a minute, you said there's a stick tackle, and then if that's happened, is there much of an advantage? So she thinks about it and then says, okay, penalty corner. And then Ben pauses and thinks, okay, thanks, penalty stroke. So that, you know, is pretty nuts. And a lot of people think actually it's probably the right decision. Maybe it wasn't reached in the right way, but largely speaking, probably the right decision. Strokes given, strokes taken, not very well, it's saved. England refer it, goalkeeper has gone off his line, so a reward is done. Another stroke, another not very good one, it's saved, but the goalkeeper is again off his line, it gets referred, and this time it stands. But by the rule, it shouldn't, because the goalkeepers move their feet, which they're not allowed to do. But the advice was, well, one foot was kind of on the line still, so it's kind of okay. And then basically the Dutch went on to win, and England could arguably feel that they should have had another stroke. So a lot happened, and I don't think it was perfect, but a big thing, and I've had the benefit of speaking to quite a few people involved with this, is, yeah, these are arguably probably the best umpires in the world right now, these three involved, and certainly of the best. So if they can't be absolutely perfect, no one is going to be absolutely perfect, are they? But yeah, a really difficult one. Maybe there'll be a look at the rules to make it a bit more lenient on the goalkeeper, to say they just have to be on the line instead of moving. Some said it's impossible. The goalkeeper can't possibly be expected to stay still. But on the other hand, the rules are the rules. Don't concede a penalty stroke if you're not going to defend it. And that's a really dicky thing to say, but that's why you have penalty strokes, is to punish something to an appropriate way of rebalancing the scales of justice.
Do both feet need to be on the line then?
Not just on the line, they cannot move until the ball is tied. Okay. And that's the problem. I think Fraser and I were messaging each other during the final. I said it, the feet have moved. Yeah. So it's definitely a retake. I've had constructive feedback from some of my umpiring colleagues that that's unreasonable of me. But also, being a goalkeeper coach, I've been well aware of that rule. So I'm in a small minority, perhaps, I don't know. But rules are rule, and it's one of those ones where, you know, we don't actually apply the rules properly in hockey. We don't say you have to stop it dead, because you don't. What's the point sometimes? And we don't say hitting the foot is definitely a foul, because it's not definitely a foul. So there's lots of different things to consider. But, I mean, ultimately, and again, this is a point I've made to a few, is if either of the strokes had been taken well, it wouldn't have mattered. Because they were both not really up to his normal standard. And some have said, well, why was he taking it, given he'd already had it saved against Vinash? And fair enough to let him go again against Vinash, but after that, maybe Sam Ward should have been stepping in, or someone else to take that and not be quite so nervous or worried. You know, it could potentially be in the back of your head. And maybe it doesn't. Maybe Bandarak's the sort of person who can just brush that off. And we'll never know. But yeah, so a difficult one. But yeah, Fraser, as a not someone who's quite so geeky and keen on umpiring, but is probably more keen on the hockey, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, again, what more can you really say about that final? It was just fantastic hockey all around.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen the England goal stand or them convert one of the penalties, just because I'm British and so I wanted to see them do well. I wanted to see how the game would pan out if it had gone to 2-2, how it would have played out, because I think the Netherlands just basically happily defended against the England attack. And I think if they'd have pulled it back to 2-2 and they had to step up and try and get a winner again, it would have been an interesting last few minutes of the game. Like you say, with the two strokes, if either one of them had been taken well, I don't think there would have been quite as much of a discussion online, let's say. I also think that the referral shouldn't have stood. I think it was 13 seconds from the ball going in and him blowing the whistle to them going and referring, not from the incident.
Yeah.
So when the ball is lifted into the defender, if he thinks it's dangerously lifted, he's not made any signal to try and refer it. They've played on, England's put the ball in. Admittedly, that's only 3-4 seconds maybe, but he's not made any intention of going to refer. It was only after the goal they had a small discussion about it, and then they decided to refer. And I think that's too long. As I said to Keeley, if it takes longer than Usain Bolt running 100 metres, it's too long.
It's an interesting way of putting it. I think asking them to refer it mid-action would be a little bit harsh, because they, you know, their attention's on the ball, and if they were to stop paying attention, potentially the ball could get fired around.
It's not necessarily stopping whatever, but the ball has hit him, it's bounced away, he's not made any signal to the umpire, he's not looked to get the umpire's attention, the ball has gone behind him, Sam Ward's tapped it in, he's still not gone to refer. It's only after they've had the defensive collective conversation in the D that they then decide to go and do it.
Yeah.
But it's not like the ball's gone in and he's rushed over and one of them stopped him. He's gone over and they've had a little chat.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I find a bit frustrating is we had, I think it was in the semi-final, Phil Roper pointed to his elbow where he felt he'd been hit by the ball or a stick or something like that. And it was immediate team referral. And he was like, no, I pointing to my elbow. I wasn't doing anything like the tee. I was pointing to my elbow to say I got hit. They went, nope, it's a team referral. What do you want? And England had to make up a team referral. And there was no, you know, like a number of the umpires will be like, are you sure you want to take it? You're definitely sure you want to take it? Okay, we'll go for team referral, thanks. They give them a chance to back down. But in the previous match, England didn't do a team referral, but still had to do one anyway. And in this one, potentially, the Dutch did take too long. Personally, I think if the match officials or the tournament director or whoever has told the squads it's 10 seconds, that's really difficult, because if it's not in the regulations, then it's much harder. But if they've been told it verbally, this is the interpretation we're going with at this tournament, and then that happens, it makes it really hard for the umpires if it's not consistent. And they won't necessarily know that they've been told 10 seconds if it's not been mentioned in an umpire briefing. If it could just be an off-the-cuff question, how long does it take? How long are we allowed? And that's asked to say the tournament director or to one of the umpire managers. They go, oh, no, 10 seconds. And that never gets back to the other umpires. Then you can see how this situation might develop. So it's a shame it's overshadowed it, because I think actually it's a really good tournament overall, not just for England. You know, the Dutch, lucky maybe, but they're clearly a team on the rise. So one thing on the
Dutch about how well they were playing, they scored zero penalty corners.
Mm.
Now, you look at historically how the Dutch have played, penalty corners have always been a big part of their success, and they've just won the European Championship without scoring a penalty corner.
Was that because is that because the teams that were defended it were good or better? Or
I think they've learned better how to deal with, like, read the drag flickers and run the channels to block it, so it just keeps on being another corner. They get frustrated and they have to go wider and wider and wider of goal to try and score and then miss.
I think it's down to possibly a number of things, isn't it? The opposition doing their homework as such, and trying to stop them, and then obviously the Dutch not having an answer to that. But it could be that, you know, they weren't on form on that tournament, possibly.
So I think it was only the Dutch that didn't score a penalty corner.
Okay.
So you can talk about not having an answer to it, other teams having research and plans and all this stuff. If every other team in the tournament is at least getting a single penalty corner goal, like I say, I haven't got the figures in front of me, so I can't say for certain, but I believe everyone else scored apart from the Dutch, and the Dutch probably had some of the highest number of penalty corners of any team.
Yeah.
That's definitely a failing on their part of not being able to succeed from penalty corners, and they still come with the gold.
Would that still be the same personnel doing it, or were they trying other people in that? I don't know.
Still had Jansen.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So they still had the usual, you know, people doing it or whatever, but just weren't committing. Okay. That's interesting. Don't know what to say more about that one, to be honest with you.
Right. Well, should we move on to the women?
Yeah. Let's go for it.
So should we start with the gold medal match? We'll start with the bronze medal match.
Go on. Let's go bronze medal.
So bronze was England against Germany. So quite an improvement from England, because they only lost 3-0 instead of losing 7-0. So progress.
A better performance as well from England.
Yeah.
They looked bullied in the group game.
Yes.
Was it one shot not on target in the group game against Germany?
Kind of. There was another one which should have been a shot, but it was erroneously given as free of defence. But never mind. I don't know. From the outside, it seemed England were in a funny situation. I actually was talking to one of the Irish players today, and England are not what they perhaps were. you know, they were missing a lot of players. You know, Maddie Hinch is retired, which is a massive hit to take when you lose the best goalkeeper in the world. Anna Toman's injured, Giselle Ansley's injured, Shona McCallum wasn't fit. She'd only just finished coming back, so she didn't make herself available, apparently. Who else? Darcy Bourne was injured. I'm sure it's someone else. So missing a lot of people, and they're all very important players as well. So on the one hand, I guess if you can miss out on a bronze medal match despite missing probably five of your most important players, that's quite encouraging.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I think personally there are some pretty odd selections. For me, Holly Hunt was our best player throughout the entire tournament, and she started every single game on the bench. Tess Howard was probably the best forward in the tournament. Bit of a bold statement, but the quality and variation of the goals was really good. Always a threat. And again, started every game on the bench. And to me, if you I appreciate it's a rotation game, but you set the tone for first whistle. And if you don't have your best team on the pitch, it's not going to be quite the same for the opposition to deal with, right? From, you know, mentally, 5 minutes of being hit hard by the best is harder to deal with and sets a tone. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how we go and what happens, because I don't think they were good enough at this tournament. I'm pretty sure they don't think they were good enough. They don't need us to tell them that.
But again, well, I think we spoke about this before, didn't we? In terms of, like, you know, the team being possibly in development, as in getting some younger players coming in. There's a lot of new faces and things like that. And obviously, like you're saying, with a lot of injuries and people not being fit enough or whatever, coming back from injury, not having as many players as we would like who are going to do, I'm not going to say a good job, but more experienced players. Sorry?
You just said it, Taff.
I know, but I didn't want to say that. I mean, I meant experienced players or whatever. But I think it could be a development thing for them. I don't know. With you saying, Si, with regards to, you know, strange selections and things like that, were they saving legs to start off with and then obviously bringing the better players on later on to give them a bit of a boost when fatigue sets in? I don't know.
Well, it's not really saving legs though, is it? Because it's only 5-7 minutes maximum, sometimes even 3 or 4. So it's not really saving legs. And that's my issue, is you need to start with the best team you got. And we didn't.
Yeah.
Every single game.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the season domestically. And I'm pretty sure it will have a good impact on the squad. There's been some movements. A lot of the women have gone to East Grinstead. So they'll all be playing together. Obviously, a lot of them are at Surbiton. So they're already there, and a few are at Wimbledon. So, you know, it's good they'll be playing more together. I think that's really important for gelling. But yeah, very disappointing personally. I think they when you look at some of the quality of players we've got, they should be doing better, and they know it. They don't need us telling them that. We have to say, because it's our jobs. We get paid a fortune for this. Why you pay us the big bucks?
That's only because we keep giving away Taff's location to Batra.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh dear. Anything to add there for on that, Fraser?
No, I think Sass pretty much covered it there.
Okay. Should we move on to the gold medal one?
Go on then. Who's going to tee off?
You're leading, so you tee off.
Oh, me to tee off?
Yeah.
All right. All right. I'll just say it. All right. I think Paul Van Ness.
I'm going to have to bring the bleeps out.
It's fair though, isn't it? So they won. Surprise, surprise. The best team in the world won. But it was close. And when they, ahead of them playing against England, he came out and he slagged off England and he made a load of comments. And ahead of them playing against Belgium, he came out and he slagged off Belgium and made a load of comments. And both media in England and Belgium reacted to it. And I kind of thought, actually, you know, all the previous coaches, they only ever said these things when they got really antagonized. So like when the Olding and hockey marketing team decided to stick up those ridiculous posts teasing the Dutch about us beating them at the Euros and GB winning at Rio and saying it was like a rivalry and an enemy or whatever, the Dutch were like, well, no, it's not. You beat us twice in like 10 years. Whoop-de-doo. And they pointed that out. And Margot van Geffen sometimes will speak plainly, but the coach is a bit of a different thing. So to me, the fact he felt the need to snipe at people and make these comments suggestive as a degree of insecurity, and they're aware that they are not a good Dutch team. By Dutch standards, they are not good. They're a good team by world standards, but by Dutch standards, which are higher, they are not a good team. So I think he probably said that because they know that they are not as good as they should be. Leaving Lidewey Velten, I think she was injured, so fair enough. And Ava Huda, interesting call. I haven't seen him play for a little while, so I can't really say, but it was a bit of a shock for everybody, I think. You know, he's got some good players. I just don't like him. I think have a bit more respect. And if you have to make those comments, it says more about you than it does the opposition.
Yeah, very much a don't punch down kind of situation. Like, you're the best team in the tournament. There's nothing gained from laying into the other teams.
Yeah.
If anything, it's going to... I think some players will bite and actually it'll make them more fired up. He's not going to make any of them go, oh, no, he thinks I'm shit. I won't do this then. It's just going to wind them up. So it's only going to have a backfire ultimately. And also, if they lost, it made them look really silly. I think if they'd lost, that's his job done, basically.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. I mean, if you're gonna trash talk, you don't really want to do it unless you've been trash talked to, right? Do you know what I mean? And if he's just coming out of the blue and just trying to antagonise the opposition, like you're saying, Si, you're going to get some players who are going to go, I'm not taking this. I'm going to show them what I can do. Yeah. Definitely going to go, oh, you know, whimper in the corner or something like that. I don't think I would. As a coach, or even, you know, as a player, I don't think I'll whimper.
Let's be realistic. I don't think anyone who reacts like that to criticism is going to make it to the international standard.
No one
who, when someone says, you can't do it, goes, okay, is going to make it that far. They're going to have a thick skin. They're more likely to either ignore it or be fired up by it. So it's a no-win situation.
Definitely.
There is nothing to be gained from it, other than making yourself look like a bigger knob if you lose.
That was the game anyway, by the way, boys.
Well, I don't know, we were all just...
Yeah, just pile on and pull that ass. Well, I was really pleased for the Belgians that they got there. I think it's a really special group. It's a proper mixture of age and experience. You know, you've got people like Barbara Nalen and Alex Kierniers, who were playing at London 2012. And then you've got people like Emily White and Charlotte Engelbert and Vanessa Blockman, who are a lot younger. I think 18, Emily White, I think. I think it's Emily White, not Emma White. Obviously, I'm going to be biased. I mean, literally, as we're recording this, I'm wearing a Belgian umpire shirt.
We didn't notice.
Yeah, there is a degree of bias, perhaps. But I think they're a fantastic group. They play some really exciting hockey. They've got legitimately some of the best players in the world now across the pitch. People like Hélène Brassier and Stephanie van der Boer in defence. Goalkeeper-wise, the new goalkeeper who's stepping in seems to be really... I mean, to be able to displace potentially Ashley Nkogue is quite something. And then midfield, you know, solid players who are just so experienced. And then up front, there's so much flair. And they were missing Ombre, who is one of the best talents in the world, but she just wasn't quite able to get back from injury in time. So yeah, I mean, for me, I was talking with one of the Irish players today about this. The thing that maybe is holding them back a little bit is that most of them play in the Belgian league, and it is a really good standard of hockey, but it's not the same as the Dutch league. And if a few of them hop over the border, I think you'll see it's going to be maybe even better. Just playing against even better players week in, week out could be just that little bit they need. It's a very exciting time for Belgian hockey.
Ray, is there anything adding to that?
Not again. I think I'd just be repeating what Si's just gone through, except getting the names wrong.
I did mispronounce one of them.
It's fine. I'm sure they'll forgive you.
Pretty sure they don't listen.
you never know. We have got quite a few people that listen to us. You'd be surprised. About two or three, but you know.
That's us, right?
yes, it's all three. You re-listen to our old podcast. Go on then, what we're going to talk about next? We were going to talk about the dry turf development, right?
Yeah, one of you two will need to lead on that. I know a little bit about it, but...
Okay, I don't know much about it. I saw an article basically just, you know, bigging it up a little bit in terms of they've come out with a new... dry turf, can't remember the name of it really, and hopefully they're hoping that this is going to be the turf that's going to be used now going forward, and with regards to sustainability and all that stuff. But the FIH has been on about sustainability for many, many years. And, you know, they want, obviously they want to use less water on international events and stuff like that. And they're hoping that this turf that's been developed is going to be what moves it forward, and without, you know, being watered. I'm not sure if you saw anything else other than that. No. Okay. So what do you think about this? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we've got clubs out there, big clubs, we've got little clubs out there that may be looking at resurfacing their pitches and things. Do you think they would take this up? Do you reckon?
If it's good enough.
Yeah.
I mean,
to be over here. Yeah. Because one has water based here.
Yeah, exactly. Crazy, you were saying?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think in the UK, probably it will get taken up by a lot of places when they come to resurfacing. I think going forward, it's a good thing to get away from the dependency on however many gallons of water it takes to water a pitch at international level and keep it playable, and potentially not open up, but make it more accessible to other countries who don't have that kind of irrigation setup that they can tap into, that they can lay this pitch and leave it as is.
Yeah, I think
not that, you know, the cost of a pitch is still many hundreds of thousands of pounds to put down.
Yeah,
but it's just one less thing to factor.
Yeah, the long-term cost of having to pay for all that water, and also like global warming and all that jazz.
Yeah,
it's like Munich and Gladbach, it was so hot, and they, you know, like I've been involved in games recently where they've had to water at quarter time, just frantically get the cannons going to try and make it vaguely playable. So even in England, it's a problem.
And to cool off the players who are still out on the pitch as they turn them on.
Yeah. But aren't they? They're launching this on the Hockey Fives World Cup thing, aren't they, in Oman? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, having been out there and seen hockey on a water based pitch, and this was one of the most advanced water based pitches you could think of, there was no sprinklers. It was coming up, rising through the turf to try and reduce evaporation. It's going to get dry fast.
Yeah.
That is not going to be a fun hockey pitch to play on if it's really dry, sticky. Like today, umpiring in Barnes, so literal Olympians could not inject the ball properly because the pitch was so dry.
Yeah.
Even with water, it was going that fast. So that's in England when it was like 31 degrees.
Yeah.
And then in Oman, God, I hope they're not dumb enough to make them play around midday, lunchtime sort of time. But even in the evenings when I was there, it was like 35, 40 degrees when they played.
Yeah. Yeah,
at like 9 o'clock at night, I'm concerned about the quality of the pitch.
Yeah,
but they need to find some sort of solution, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know whether they've done temperature testing and things like that or whatever. They must have done.
You're putting a lot of faith in the FI.
No, I'm talking about the developers. You know, they must have done a lot of testing in terms of like temperature testing and things like that. So, I'm hoping that they've done their research, they've done their due diligence and stuff, and when they do use this at the Hockey Fives, it's going to be all right, playable. But like you're saying, Si, hopefully they won't play it during the day, they'll play it in the evening, even though it's going to be quite hot in the evening anyway, possibly. But yeah, it's quite interesting. This has been in development for many, many years, though, isn't it? They've been looking for a solution for, I'd probably say about 10 plus years, even longer possibly, for moving away from like water-based pitches. So if this happens and we get a lot more clubs that will take this up, who knows, we could have international games in the north as well and not just in London or whatever.
Oh, you know?
Do you know what I mean? So, you know, it could be a good thing. It could be a good thing overall, especially in this country anyway.
Yeah, I think if it was to help get more internationals played around the UK in particular, that'd be fantastic. I think there's other factors at play. I was really pleased that they hosted the domestic final weekend for Premier League away from Lea Valley. I'm not sure Surbiton was the best place to do it. It's a great club, but parking and other restrictions, and also doing it during the season was a genius move. But never mind. Apparently it's still sold out, which is quite something. England hockey's never struggled to sell tickets. If there's a realistic chance of selling tickets, they manage it somehow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would like to see it up in the north and up in the Midlands. And when it's GB playing, it's a joke that it's not played in Scotland and Wales.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have a national stadium anymore in Scotland, but they do in Wales. And Scotland's got plenty of good places they could pop up, a few extra stands around the sideline. One of the best games I went to was France versus England in Lille, and there's no stands. It was just like 3,000 people lined up around the pitch, about four lines deep.
Yeah.
Fun. Couldn't see all the hockey, but great atmosphere. And charged like a fiver to get in. Yeah. That's all it needs to be. No one minds paying a fiver, especially when the beer's that good.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, should we move on? I think we've...
Go on, then.
Yeah, go on, then. What's
next? Spoil ourselves. The next thing was clothing policies. Terribly exciting, I know.
Oh, yeah, for the young players. Go on, then.
Yeah, so it's something we've talked about a lot in the National League umpiring stuff, and we've changed. I'm not speaking as the NPOA here. I'm just speaking as Simon. But yeah, we've got a new policy that is about having a more inclusive approach to clothing. So we have said that shorts are permitted, and that's for both men and women, and that religious headwear is explicitly permitted, because we didn't actually say that. Of course, it always was, but now it's written down, which makes it that little bit easier for people to have confidence that they're okay to take part. Things to do with glasses, things to do with caps, it's all written down. And there's been a predictable reaction. I didn't actually intend to wear shorts myself. I quite like wearing trousers when I umpire, but I did not count on it being like 33, 34 degrees whilst umpiring the last 2 days. So I did decide to go out and get a pair of golf shorts and some knee-high socks. And I got loads of shanter from my mates on the sideline when I was umpiring Sevenoaks against Cambridge. And a few questions today. But as someone who's got a neurological disability, had I not worn them, I probably would have collapsed trying to wear trousers in the weather today. And simply by having that option written down, it enabled me to do that with a degree of confidence. Most weeks I'll wear trousers. It's only going to be in extreme heat, but I wouldn't. But for others, you know, particularly for women, skirts are rubbish. They have crap pockets if they're lucky. And this will allow them to actually be more functional. And potentially, if they're not body confident, to look and feel more professional themselves. So, yeah, very exciting. Yeah, anything you have to say about umpires and clothing?
I imagine ridiculous. They should be in three-piece suits.
Yeah, whenever someone challenges me on it, I sort of always flip it around and go, okay, well, why aren't you wearing a blazer and white gloves still? And why do you come in the middle of the pitch? Because we used to be on the sideline. So why aren't you doing that? And it's called progress. So come on.
I think it's a good idea. Well, it's a good thing. It's a good policy change, I reckon. Just like the change of policy for players for international games and or whatever, ladies especially, in terms of them being able to wear shorts if they wish to, rather than skirts. And I think it's going to help, especially with the weather that we've been having, you know, this week or whatever, in terms of like internationals or national league games and or whatever. It's going to help the umpires cool down at least anyway. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, hopefully it'll filter down to lower levels.
Well, to be honest with you, I wore shorts on the weekend. I was umpiring.
You know, man.
Shock. And it's the first time I've ever
done. You didn't get a single decision right.
Probably didn't. but yeah, I had to step in, and I was already wearing shorts. So basically just had to umpire instead of coach. But yeah, I mean, you know, if I didn't wear the shorts and I had like tracky bottoms on, it was way too hot for that, to be honest with you, running around.
Yeah.
Way too hot.
Yeah. Anything for you, Fraser?
Yes, monocles are a must. You can wear shorts, you can wear trousers, don't get a monocle, mandatory.
Fair enough. I think we should bring out like signal flares when, when it's a stroke, like literally pull the gun out and boom, the arm goes up. It's all about the flamboyance.
Oh, brilliant.
I think you should get in touch with Y1 for next year's Y1 championship. I think that would be something they would consider.
Wouldn't put it past him, yeah. Right, so the last
thing all strokes must be taken with strobe lights as well.
Yeah. All shuttles go to strobe light. They could do that for Lindor, couldn't they?
Yeah.
They actually could, you know, for sure. Absolutely. That'd be very
those goalkeepers just time it perfectly and just kick him in the head.
Oh dear.
No advice possible on video referral.
Oh dear.
I have like an infrared one.
That would still totally not be right, you know, even if it's infrared or like heat sensor, it still won't work.
What you really need, the ideal video umpire is not Ali Keo, it's Predator.
Oh dear.
Anyway, so our last swiftly moving on. The Spanish coaching departure of Adi Lopp, which I think caught a lot of us off guard.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you mentioned it, I was like, what? What? I mean, he's been there for God knows how long, 10 years-ish, maybe a little bit more than that. And what has he done? He's done loads for the women's game anyway. He's done loads for it. And look at where they've come from, you know, from when he started to where they are now. Did they win the European in 2018?
No, they got a bronze at the World Cup in 2018.
Bronze, yeah, that's it. Sorry. But yeah, I mean, look, from being like a team that wasn't even competing to come in and doing that, that's pretty good. And that's within about what, 4 or 5 years or something like that of him being there and developing. Yeah.
Not many people know Spanish hockey is actually very small. It's not a big sport. There's about it's literally like in the single digit thousands of players, and yet they are consistently fighting for medals, which shows the quality of the players and the quality of the setup of the clubs and the quality of the setup in the national team. So I wasn't necessarily completely surprised, because they did have a disappointing Euros.
Yeah.
And they didn't have a good World Cup either. When we hosted it in Terrassa, but I'm not entirely sure that's down to him. Part of that's the talent pathway. I don't know how much he's involved in that. And part of it's down to the clubs.
Yeah.
They have got older players who have stepped away from the squad, and I'm not sure if it was always by choice. If they were dropped, then that's on him. If they retired because they were getting on, fair enough. But a lot of those players were hard ones to replace. But yeah, for me, if a vacancy came up over here, I'd like to think he'd be one of the contenders.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good coach. I like him, and he's just his mannerisms and the way he talks to the players, and just an all-round kind of, like, you know, a nice guy and a good coach as well. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I swore again. I think he got a little bit messed about by them getting kicked out of Pro League when they shouldn't have been. They kept in the Americans, didn't they? And that's when the Spanish should have gone in.
Yeah,
and although we all take the mickey out of how crap Pro League is, because it isn't great, you are still playing against the best teams and a lot of very good players, and that opportunity to mix with them and so on again for a second season in a row, or two out of three seasons, I think it would have been a really good thing for them. Fraser?
Yeah, so just to touch on what he's done with the Spanish setup. Because Simon says it's not a huge player base, but it's also not a huge player base that really spread out. So I have a friend who's moved across to Spain, and he was playing a decent level. And he was saying, you know, the next nearest club from here, if I want to go and play at a higher level still, is like a 2-hour drive. And then you look at places like Belgium and the Netherlands, a 2-hour drive will take you from one end of the country to the other.
Actually, it takes you out of the country.
We're talking about doing the speed limit here, Simon, not how you drive. But just to put into context how good a job he has done to bring them up to the standard that they are at, with that in mind, that players might be, you know, 5-6 hours apart from each other and can't be training together every day. And he's having to put faith in club coaches, in players, to do what's requested of them to get them up to this standard. So it's a next level job that he's done with it.
And he had such a good beard.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was a mistake. He cut it off.
Yeah, that's why he lost the job.
Yeah.
They thought he was an imposter.
Well, he never had one to start off with. Well, when he first started, he didn't have one. And then he grew one, and now he's not got one anymore. Don't know. But, you know, wherever he goes next, he's going to be a good asset to whichever NGO or whatever, wherever he goes, whichever national team he takes up. I think he's going to be, hopefully, very sought after, to be honest with you. And if we've got an opening, maybe.
Yeah, our men's twos are looking for someone right now.
Yeah, there you go. You know what, men's twos? Not all.
Our one's got a coach. He's great. A guy called Grant. He's top.
just drop him down and get
AD can come and do the twos for a bit.
Yeah. So if you're listening, AD, let's get you down to
Yeah, if he wants to come on the podcast though, he's got to grow the beard back.
Yeah, okay.
We're a pro beard podcast.
Yeah, we'll have all of us have excellent facial hair. That's something I'd back us on.
We'll have to do that. We'll have to get him on. I'll get in touch with him. So if you're listening anyway, AD, send me a text or something. Anyway, right. So that's what I want to talk about.
So moving on to any other business, and Fraser, I think you have a point of order to raise.
Yeah, so happening just after our recording last time, talking about Euro hockey, in one of the Pool C clashes, there was a player spitting directly into the face of the opposition. I don't know if you guys saw this.
I caught the highlight clip sort of thing. I don't know. What do you guys think about that? I just don't think he was that provoked. Do you think that?
I read an interesting thing where a French official that I know was saying, basically, in the Spaniards' defence, the players... and everyone on Facebook was like, that doesn't mean it's okay.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, but I think you need to understand the context. But this guy really antagonized it. Like, yeah, but it still doesn't make it okay.
Yeah.
So the French guy is known as being a bit of a and they had lost their video referral, and that was basically that. Game over as a consequence. And he said something to annoy the Spaniard, who then thought, well, I'm not having any of that, so I will spit in your face, sir. And of course, the Frenchman was asking for a video referral, which you can't have because of where it happened on the pitch. And it wasn't to do with a ball anyway. But yeah, it got referred. I think Keely, who is, of course, the all-knowing source that we turn to, she was rather good at this umpiring lark. She was saying two-match ban minimum. And then everyone was quite shocked to find out it was one match, but that was because the code of conduct dictated that. And I would say the code of conduct's probably wrong and it needs to be revised or whatever it was called. But yeah, Keely was really hot on it, and then I think gave a pretty fair assessment of the situation.
Yeah, I think she said, you know, on the grand scale of things that could have been done when provoked, spitting is kind of low on, as much as you can go, it's disgusting, it shouldn't happen. There are much bigger steps that could have been taken. So you have to look at it kind of in context. Yes, should we want people to spit on other people? Definitely not. Should there be some kind of punishment? Yes, there should. But did he brain him with a hockey stick? No. There's a lot of potential actions that he could have taken from that. Oh. And spitting is, like I say, fairly low down on the reaction list.
Yeah. I think everyone's shocked with, in terms of, because it was disgusting. And not because it was, you know, like a physical, aggressive physical hit or with a stick or whatever. I've never seen that. Not in hockey anyway. I've seen it in football a couple of times, but never in hockey. And I think they need to sort of like say, this is not acceptable. Doesn't matter about whether you waft your stick about and hit someone or whatever, or you grab them by the throat, which we have seen in the past. But you're quite right, Si. I think it should have been a bit a longer ban for him, to be honest with you, because you've got to make an example of these sort of instances, especially when it's probably one of the first instances that I've ever noticed in terms of somebody spitting in somebody else's face. I'm sure it probably might go on in league hockey somewhere. I don't know, but never seen it in the international sort of like stage. So I think maybe a bigger ban should have been given, really. I'm probably in agreement with, obviously, the all-knowing Keely.
Actually, that's a good thing at AOB. I had the pleasure of actually meeting up with her face-to-face. Not once, not twice, but 3 days.
Wow, look at you. Where was this?
Nottingham for the NPOA conference and gala dinner. So I saw her Friday and a Saturday. And then on the Monday, we met up as well and had lunch together. And then she came and did a little session at my club, as a coach, bizarrely. I think she wasn't expecting to do much coaching, but she did a really good job by all accounts.
Yeah.
And it's just really good. I think it was fantastic. Our club, we've got a few really decent young umpires, and particularly young women umpires. And for them to have a strong role model like Keely, who, you know, has umpired at as high a level as you can get to, really, in the FIH, and someone who really proactively tries to help empower and build a community I think it's fantastic they actually got to meet her face to face.
Sorry, go on. Sorry.
And like, she has legs and everything. She's like a real person. She's not just actually a rectangle.
yeah, definitely. She, very nice lady as well. I met her a couple of times way back when, many years ago, before she became MH Umpire. You know, met her. Nice lady. Really, really good at, you know, if you've got a question for her, she'll answer. She'll reply to you, whatever. And she's been doing a bit of a tour here, hasn't she? What was it called again? I can't remember.
Like Umpire Rhapsody or something like that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, of course. And I think, you know, that's a good thing because, like you're saying, good role model for, you know, umpires in general, especially female umpires. And hopefully a lot of people who went to this Umpire Rhapsody thing have learned a lot of things and found it interesting. And I know a couple of friends that I know personally that went to one of these seminar type things. And, you know, really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
Well, I can also proudly say I have had a Keeley backhand for saying short corner instead of penalty corner now.
Yeah.
Bless you, Taff. Taff's just sneezed off camera.
Thank you. Yeah, so, yeah, have you ever met her, Fraser?
No. Wouldn't be safe for me to meet her. I say so many bad things about umpires.
Yeah, sure. You'll probably get a dull backhander, innit?
With a car.
Yeah. Oh dear. Oh god. Anything else, guys? Or is this it?
That's it from me.
That's it.
Wow, amazing. So do you wanna outro us then, Si? Seems like you intro us.
Yeah, I can do. Well, knowing me, very tired umpire who has walked or run 40 kilometers in the last 3 days. Knowing you, Fraser, or Boss IF Hockey, who is anonymous. According to Reverse Stick, and knowing you, Taff, who has escaped the basement dungeon again. Till next time. Aha!